Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Web3 podcast. On this week's episode, we have guest Joel Rivera. Joel and me have known each other for a while now, and he actually also works in the Southeast where I'm at, an area where blockchain does not get too much love, so it's awesome to always talk to him and discuss what he's been up to. In this week's episode, we talk all about how philanthropy is being impacted by tokens and blockchain, and how he envisions the future of higher ed with blockchain. So stay tuned and get ready for another episode, because this is the Web3 Ed Podcast. This episode is sponsored by BAF. BAF stands for the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation, and they are a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to accelerating the development and adoption of Web3. BAF hosts networking and educational meetups and supports blockchain clubs at universities worldwide. BAF's sponsors and supporters include NEAR and the Algorand Foundation, who help BAF launch more educational activities. To learn more, follow the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation on Twitter. Are you sick of expensive classes that don't help you in today's competitive work environment? EduCoin was too. So we built a decentralized learning management system that allows any teacher to host an open access industry sponsored class. If you're a teacher and want to learn more about how you can build the class of the future, or a student looking to grow your career, visit educoin.store to see how they are helping students, teachers, and employers connect to make a more healthy secondary education ecosystem.
Introduce yourself a little bit to the audience.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to be here. We were just chopping it up, and I was like, man, this is a great conversation. So my name is Joel. I'm currently working as a development officer, which is essentially fundraising for Wake Forest University. I graduated, my alma mater is University of Florida. That's where I had my first development job. And so I moved over to Winston-Salem last year. And so I've been in this new role for a few months now. So still kind of, it hasn't even been 6 months since this job. And, it's been really an incredible experience, but yeah, I'm really passionate about philanthropy. That is my, you know, my purpose in life. Is I've always been raised just kind of being with the community, working in the community, being a part of helping, you know, the different community efforts that have been going on, homeless shelters, things like that. And so it's been in my blood since I was a kid. So now transitioning to sort of Web3 and sort of this area, I have sort of ignited a passion of really understanding what this technology can do to advocate for, you know, underprivileged communities or any other nonprofit philanthropic sector. It's a game changer. So I've been spending a lot of time researching, learning, and trying to question, you know, the way things have been done in this sector. So yeah, it's a little bit kind of a little broad about me in regards to my passions and what I'm doing these days.
For sure. So, you know, kind of expanding on that, what was the first thing that got you into blockchain or Web3 technology, or made you have like a moment like, this is interesting, I should kind of scratch this itch a little bit more?
Yeah, no, for sure. I would say there was a point, again, I just mentioned I was big in, you know, philanthropy is my passion, helping people. And thinking about sort of the next generation and sort of the struggles that, you know, a lot of kids these days and these underprivileged communities may have and go through as time goes on, especially as technology advances. But there was a point in time with my work at the University of Florida when I was working in fundraising where I'm not sure. There are some folks out there that may question, why do we do things this way? As a young person coming into an established system, is, you know, there may be ways that we can really be more efficient or be creative or really try new things. And so that point started to think about it. And this was at the time where you started to hear and see a lot about NFTs and blockchain. I've been in crypto a little bit since 2017. Just me and my buddies talking about it, investing the little that we had as college students. But really, from there on to 2021, there was that moment of I really enjoy what I do. I really love being a part and really trying to maximize the good that we can do. And so how are we going to really work with the next generation, and how are we going to reimagine the way we do our work to better and fall in line with sort of the next generation? And so that's when I started to learn and dive in and really started to have an open mind on these different technologies, such as, you know, blockchain, artificial intelligence, extended reality, and really starting to pay closer attention to what was happening in these spaces. So yeah, since then I've been meeting folks on, you know, in person, reaching out on LinkedIn, and really trying to be an advocate and being a sponge really of what's going on and what is possible, because I think we're still in that stage where we can say it's still early. But now we're starting to see a lot of businesses and banks and corporations starting to really question and talk about and open about what this technology is capable of. And so it really is, in a way, reassuring of what is possible.
Yeah. So you used to be at University of Florida. Now you're at Wake Forest, you know, and these ideas and these new technologies, they can be extremely exciting, especially for young people and on a college campus. But traditionally, they aren't the first adopters of it. You know, MIT students and Harvard, okay, maybe, sure. But, you know, conventional universities, liberal arts colleges, it's generally a little bit slow to make its way in. Maybe it's an elective class, but it's not something that's being embraced widespread. I would say even ed tech software in many ways on college campuses is usually a little bit out of date for a while, even if the students' social media accounts are super up to date. So tell me a little bit about what was your experience kind of taking this to your campus or introducing it to your peers? Did they think you were crazy? Did you feel like you were welcome with this stuff, or what's been going on that front?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I feel like I have another layer of that. You mentioning sort of higher education, knowing, all right, we're going to take things slow, really learn about what's going on with these technologies. On top of that, the nonprofit sector may be even slower. So it's like I have a double whammy of, man, we have to engage with the higher education system. But then when you look at the nonprofit and the philanthropic sector, we're generally the ones that take our time when adopting these new technologies. And that's just because the way, you know, we operate, being transparent, being efficient with money, knowing that we run through donations. A lot of these technologies may cost, you know, money to start or have trial and error opportunities. So it is very difficult to really, in a way, tap into it. So you can imagine me being super excited about all these different technologies and saying, we have a new way of doing things. And really being creative and new opportunities, and really expanding in my world, sort of that donor base. And so that was my thing. I would really go and try and speak with as many people as possible to really show them my passions in this area, and just really going, following my intuition and my gut of, hey, let's just keep an open mind. Let's have these conversations. So yes, there was a lot of folks who said, you know, you're silly. And, there was a lot of, rightly so. And a lot of, folks who, you know, called crypto scams and, it's not going to work, or let's see. But, you know, that's part of the process. I think it's really good to really fight against and understand people's perspectives, because I was once one of the, you know, people that said, oh, NFTs are a scam, or, you know, crypto just doesn't make sense. How would this work? I get it. So really for me, it was having empathy of that and knowing like I was in the same boat, and really trying to understand how important education is. And so that really sort of became my mission, was how can I talk about my experiences, talk about my ideas? And so LinkedIn, quite honestly, was my outlet for that. I really got to the, you know, point and stage where I felt comfortable and confident enough to just throw my ideas out there. And I think that's one of the best things that I've really, looking back, have ever done for myself, was truly believing in myself, you know, following my gut and understanding that, yeah, this technologies and stuff may be early, but I can talk about my ideas, have an open mind, and try and find those internally who I've worked with in person and online through LinkedIn who may have similar point of views. And then from there, being able to have conversations to figure out how are we going to tackle this horizon of issues of how are we at the end of the day going to implement these technologies into our workspace. And so, yeah, it's a very deep, it's a very deep conversation, because essentially you're talking about restructuring and reworking the way we do things. And that in itself is a lot. So a long-winded answer. I get very passionate about it because it's one of those where, man, I know all too well how, like, just not, you know, anyone not listening to you, but really just keep fighting and learning. And for me, it's been paying off big time.
For sure. Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about your experience. You said education was the key. Do you find yourself working with the students on campus, with the community as a whole in Salem, or is it really just the people you have to fundraise through, right? Because you're doing philanthropy on campus. That's correct.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, I just started my role in Wake Forest a few months ago. And so I haven't yet been able to kind of tackle and really dive into the crypto sphere, we can put it that way. But one of the things that I am excited about is that Wake Forest does accept crypto donations. And so that, compared to my old job at Florida at the time, Florida did not really accept crypto donations. They didn't have a seamless process. It was starting to get talked about. And so that's what I'm really focused really on what I do right now with Wake Forest and the fundraising and understanding the culture. But there is endless opportunity there within sort of a blockchain students club, folks who have donated crypto in the past to Wake Forest that I haven't yet been able to have conversations with. And then sort of those who are fundraisers internally wanting to learn about crypto, what it can do, the possibilities, who owns it, who donates it, why, and really starting those conversations of what does a crypto philanthropy campaign look like? How do we target what audience that we're trying to engage? What's good to know? And so really that's the role I'm playing right now, and trying to balance, you know, the new job, understanding a new culture, wanting to do, you know, really well when it comes to my fundraising here specifically for the library, and then finding the opportunities to engage internally with members and externally with donors of what is possible with crypto, why, how did we start to accept it, and what conversations revolve around crypto, so that we can then start educating more folks that are part of all these different teams that we need to understand. So education, really, that's been the grind for me, because it really is important. And even me, I'm still learning every single day. It feels like the space moves at high speed. And, you know, it's like in crazy years. 1 year, one year feels like 10. So it's really important that the education route is, you know, we think about it and talk about it with our colleagues.
Yeah. So tell me how you've been educating campus. Like, are you using resources from the community? I know there's a lot of foundations and educational resources kind of online. Do you bring speakers? Do you actually show them apps and, like, kind of give them tutorials? Like, hey, here's how you can donate Bitcoin, and it's so much faster than if you were to give us cash. Or I don't know. Is there a bank account for Wake Forest that you manage a wallet? How does that work?
So I'm not sure if you heard of the Giving Block. But that is who we use. And I believe if it's one of the founders, I'm not sure if two, one of the co-founders is a graduate of Wake Forest Business School. And so that, I believe, was the introduction of the Giving Block. I believe right now the Giving Block is the number one nonprofit platform to accept crypto, NFTs, everything Web3 related. And so, that is who we use. For me, just to be quite honest, it's been very personal relationships and personal one-on-one conversations. I have found, still in these early stages, it's very difficult to, in a way, grasp everyone's attention when talking about a topic that, one, people may already have feelings, negative feelings towards, two, just have no idea of where to start. And so for me, I've been tackling this education. I've been really, you know, when you start a new job and you want to meet with everyone, learn how the system works, ask questions. I have used that time to really express my passion for crypto and gauging the other person's knowledge and understanding of crypto and really diving into discussions and conversations that way. For me, I think where I'm at currently in like my career and where at Wake Forest, it was really important to start to let folks know like, hey, I'm here fundraising for the library, but at the same time, I'm very passionate about crypto, the younger generation, what is possible, and then starting the conversation out that way. And I've had a lot of incredible conversations from folks who were skeptical or just kind of completely said, I don't want to talk about this right now, to those who have had an open mind. And it's a slow grind, but it's one that really I want to be mindful of because I know it's who I and what my gut and how I want to do my work. So I do hope to get to the day where once we have a good understanding and people know, you know, that I really care about this stuff, then we can sort of create focus groups to talk about within our jobs, how things can change, how this crypto can help us move towards our goals and our mission. And then moving then larger to sort of the bigger picture of now that we've met with everyone individually, we've had our focus groups, let's start talking about what a mini campaign can look like. How can we all work together to try something new? And then go into that sort of that more big presentation side of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Kind of starting from the bottom.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like how the giving block actually works or factors in. I think it's something I've heard of before. I've seen, it sounds good, but like in practice, like walk me through this, like layman terms, how does giving block help you or work for your situation?
Yeah, it is. It provides an opportunity for anyone to donate crypto, and it's as easy as it's on a widget on our website.
Okay.
So,
what's that website, by the way?
Just the Giving Block, or you can go on the Giving Block's website and see all the nonprofits that they help and are part of their team.
Okay.
You can go. They have the different sort of different. You have like your animals, your nonprofits, your higher educations, your YMCAs, and then it's as simple as a widget on Wake Forest's Giving Pages website, and that's what it looks like for all the other nonprofits. Is very easy and simple. So I've donated through the Giving Block to Wake Forest, and it was just going to my wallet. Taking the wallet number that they have and shooting X amount of money how I want to give, and very, very simple and easy to use. And I think that's what's important really right now when trying to adopt or trying to push new initiatives is how would this make it easy for anyone to use it who is in the crypto world. So
sure. So walk me through a little bit about I'm an alumni. Say I'm Tim Duncan. I think he went to Wake Forest, right?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So let's say Tim Duncan, he's got all this Bitcoin, he's crushing it, but he doesn't want to sell it, right? He's like, I don't want to pay the gains on this. I bought Bitcoin at, $2,000. Like, it'll crush me. I'll have, all millions of taxes. Is Giving Block a way for him to like potentially donate his Bitcoin directly to Wake Forest and in a way where he doesn't have to kind of go through all these hoops of selling it, getting it back to USD, and then y'all converting it to USD at some point? Or I guess, how does that life cycle look like?
That's exactly how it works. So you're Tim Duncan and we're having a conversation and we're saying, hey, we really want to, we're launching this new initiative where we hope to get a new base of donors that really may not even be Wake Forest University graduates or have any ties, but they care about crypto and they care about education and really what it does and what it supports and what it represents. And he's like, perfect. I have a million in Bitcoin. I'd just like to, give without having to pay taxes or anything. And that's the beautiful thing of giving back to, nonprofits and philanthropy is you don't have to pay taxes on those gifts. And so the Giving Block serves as that third party entity that makes that process seamless and makes that process possible. And so they have all the tax work. They work with the university in this case to make sure that the donor gets a tax receipt. They get all the information that they need so that when it comes time to fill out your taxes, you have that information and you don't get taxed. So 100%, which is the same way with stocks, the same way with different kind of gifts that are not necessarily cash at the end of the day. So,
gotcha. So talk to me a little bit about this, the Wake Forest Library and the program that you fundraise for. So I feel like in some ways it might not fit into the decentralized ethos, right? You have a college campus, you know, this is a very wealthy old institution, probably really administered in some ways. You know, there's probably a dean and president, many layers of that. How can a library that's kind of part of this billion-dollar enterprise, probably, right? I mean, Wake Forest, how is it sitting in a decentralized world, or why is it a project that crypto enthusiasts might care about, or why is what you're doing kind of fit within a decentralized ethos? Can you talk to me about that a little bit?
Yeah, man, this is a that's a great question, Jake. I've thought so long about this. So it was interesting when I was applying for the different jobs and looking at, you know, where I want to go next. I have a very strong passion for higher education. And so it really made me the person I am today, right? I got my experiences. I learned when it comes to the library, you have to think there are multiple ways. The first way I can describe is you think of a library, you think of a traditional, you have the stacks, you have the old book smell, you know, you have all these resources that are paper. You know, you just can imagine folks back in the day walking through the stacks and picking out a book. What I think people fail to realize is in higher education institutions, a lot of the times we have sort of a special collections and archives. And really what's huge in this sort of sector, like this part of the library, is that we digitize a lot of our resources to make it available for students online. And so when you think of the blockchain, that's the underlying technology of crypto, digitizing a book, you know, you have this old book, we're going to go through a process of digitizing, which turns it to, at the end of the day, basically a PDF where you can command F, find whatever you want if you're a researcher. When you think of sort of the evolution of what's next, you can really think about blockchain and really utilizing the transactions, utilizing the transparency of who's using what, who's, you know, tracking all of the different ways that and the different students are using these resources, and also making sure that they are the right resources. I think as technology advances, you know, this, it gives us the opportunity to say, this is a true Wake Forest institution, you know, journal that has been digitized and then put on the blockchain to have for our resources. That's one way that I think we're down the line. One of my opinions that I think will happen, that's just, again, the evolution of how this technology may work. Another is big picture to serve as a library, to serve as the information in a way to really take advantage of understanding the history and giving access to students of that history, right? So if we were to create a whole new, and I've thought about this initiative a lot, and I think one day I'm hoping we get to the point where this can be a reality. But when I think, what will a blockchain or crypto, you know, a fundraiser or initiative look like, it'd be even, for example, as the Giving Block or any other platforms that students, past alumni may have started, we can serve as the end resource to our students so that they learn from those areas and that they know, you know, what the history of. Does that make sense? So it really is kind of, the possibilities are endless when it comes to the library. Also the educational aspect, we have the space where we meet with faculty, staff, students, where we challenge, where we generate new ideas. It really is a place where we like to be up to date on things so that we make sure the students have the resources necessary to be successful in their work and their academic work. So there is, you know, ways of education, ways of having history, and representing, knowing what all happens and how it happens for the future. And then again, it's that blockchain technology and putting everything on the blockchain and having the transactions. But that one, I don't know about that one as much, but the rest, I've thought about a lot. Because it's tough. You think of the library, you're like, how does this tie in with anything that you're passionate about?
So it's interesting to me. I think there's two things that are super interesting about this project and why I wanted to have you on the pod. The first is that I think we need to normalize just Bitcoin doing stuff in the world, right? Like, it can't just be a speculative asset that you hold like up in value. So the fact that you can donate to a library and that hopefully y'all at some point could actually use it to pay for professional writers or give back to your community or do something with it. I think that establishing normalcy within that ecosystem, mission critical, whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever currency or token you'd like to use. It seems like Bitcoin would be the most logical for donations, but either way. The second thing that was super interesting about this is just that, the giving block is fascinating to me because, there's obviously like crowdfunding websites, right? Like where you can go on, post your either like something that terrible happened to you, like my dog passed away, or I need help, with medical bills, or you can like fundraise a startup, and there's all sorts of crowdfunding sites. But giving block's interesting because it's like, hey, these are projects that kind of fit, I guess, to some sort of a mold. Do you have to apply to the giving block? And then, two, it's only nonprofit, so it seems like you're purely using Bitcoin in the ecosystem where it's trying to do good. So the gains that were realized really are just going back into the society, which further probably would hold, incentivize holding or buying or believing this asset because it's doing good in the world, right? So tell me a little bit about your experience, like kind of implementing the giving block and I guess using it on campus. Did you convince people that Bitcoin is valuable, or you just kind of did it? What's that been like?
Yeah, no. I mean, those are all. These are the questions that you're asking. Is the questions I encourage every single person to ask, to think about, to question, to challenge. Because we're at that point now where I don't. There is no right answer. There are multiple ways to go about accepting crypto. The giving block is the way Wake Forest went. So that was before I got there. Giving block was already implemented before I got there. So I don't really know the details of how, that all went. But what I do know is that they accept a crazy amount of tokens. It's not just Bitcoin or Ethereum. Just one thing I want to reiterate that I kind of mentioned early on was that it may seem something very simple, but it's something that the nonprofit sector needs. Like I'd mentioned, we're very slow to really take on anything new, to try new things. And we're at the higher education level where it's supposed to be quick, right? It's like, well, you guys are learning these things in real time. You have professors that may be working in these different projects. But when you look at smaller nonprofits who maybe only have a handful of volunteers, or maybe their team is three or four people who are a wide range of age diversity and thought diversity, but no one has any idea of what crypto does. There needs to be something in the nonprofit space that can really make that process seamless, not only make it seamless, but be able to provide education, be able to provide as a place where, like I mentioned before, people go to see what other schools or other nonprofits are doing. And so it's a much needed, idea and concept that there's multiple that accept crypto donations. I'm just saying the giving block because that's what Wake Forest uses. But at the end of the day, for me, it would have been I have my crypto wallet. We can just donate to a different crypto wallet and can accept it. But bigger picture, sector wide, it's important to have folks and companies like the Giving Block because they truly help us push, the education and the knowledge and the legitimacy of crypto in the space. So if I see that Red Cross and American, YMCA and Boys and Girls Club using these platforms, for me, it's okay, well, this gives us an opportunity that it can make it a lot easier to onboard this small nonprofit that has three people to accept crypto donations. So.
Early on in the show, it was about like episode 4 or 5, we talked to Guy Gibbs, founders out of Costa Rica, and he was talking all about how NGOs, which are nonprofits, were essentially using crypto now in order to cut down on just an immense amount of fees, right, to get money from wealthy countries into developing nations, and then actually see what's going on with this money once it's in the country. Is someone pocketing it? You know, where's the cuts going? And that's a huge issue, right? Especially in international nonprofits. But I think there's also a lot of bloat in regional nonprofits, right? I think that there's one or two that, you know, I've heard of military nonprofits that where the funds have kind of been a little sketchy. Like, was it going to admin? You know, what percent's actually going to helping with medical bills versus, you know, just making someone wealthy if it's, you know, taking a salary for working there. And I think that's critical. And I think it's definitely something crypto can help with. But it requires a cultural shift, right? Because, you know, who doesn't want that to happen? The people that are pocketing the money or the people that are probably advantaging. Yeah. So,
no, this is, man, this is the, it's deep when you think about just the, really the values and the way, you know, nonprofits work. We are built on a trust system, right? At the end of the day, someone trusts me when I meet with them to, okay, well, Wake Forest will do good with this money. What the blockchain allows with crypto giving allows is to really, and it's early on, you have really have to understand. And I think there'll be better ways in the future to be able to read what's going on, but there is a way, if I were to start a brand new nonprofit and figure out a way to effectively take away all of the systems we currently have in place and only utilize blockchain technology to bounce from one wallet labeled unrestricted to another wallet labeled scholarship and being able to showcase that with good purpose to your donor base and the community, then that's a game changer in itself. It has to be authentic. It has to be talked about. It has to be community driven. And that's where my passion is. That's what I like to think about at the end of the day is how can I take this blockchain technology with, in my case, artificial intelligence and then extended reality, which is virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality, thinking 20 years down the line, how can we totally imagine, reimagine the way nonprofits run right now to essentially create an easy experience that shows exactly where every penny is going to, showing the percentages, having folks back up that information to then utilize the talent and the time that we have to tell stories of the impact, to really connect with donors, to really connect with the communities that we are helping. And I believe that needs to happen to really see and show truly the impact that these technologies can have. I think we're going to have a difficult time trying to put a new system in to an old, old system, right? So it is interesting and there is, it's very sketchy. And the reality is there are people out there that are playing the system and playing the game and stealing money. And so that's where the scammy stuff comes in. That's where a lot of the bad headlines that come out on the news, it's all comes from there. But at the end of the day, paying attention to the bigger picture and knowing, well, this technology, when used right, can fundamentally change the way we do things. I think that's what we need to show. And that's what I want to work toward.
Very cool. So most of our audience is currently in college, so a lot of younger folks. Some of my LinkedIn connections and network as well, which is great. You know, people in ed tech that are trying to figure out, you know, is blockchain really going to be a thing? What would your recommendation be, particularly to the young people that are trying to either, you know, make the most of their 20s, do something in the blockchain, Web3 space, AR, VR space, AI space, whatever you want to think the next 10 years is going to look like. So when they're 30 and looking back, they can feel like, wow, you know, I'm happy I didn't get, you know, missed out on this curve. Because I, you know, I was graduating college in 2011 undergrad, and everything was an app. That's when Uber, Twitter was getting big and Facebook was getting big. And, you know, 2015, I started to kind of get into it, start my own company and think about, you know, I can make my own app and I can do something in telemedicine. And it kind of crushed me because it's really hard to start a business. And also, it's demoralizing when you see all these app companies getting millions of users and millions of dollars from VC and you can't really get it done. It took a long time to learn how to build product and also how to build a business with customers. So anyways, enough about me. What would your advice though be to those people in their 20s now looking at the next 10 years or at their life?
One thing that I would say really is it's a deep loaded question, man, because it's something, you know, that I even struggle with and I really think about and I try to be mindful. I think the one thing is to really be true to yourself and find out the why you are trying to get into space. I think that's one of the most important areas of where to start is, for me, I would always, you take the strengths quest, you know, those leadership exams and tests that tell you who you are and what you are. My first one has always been futuristic, but it wasn't until, you know, a few years ago where I really understood why that was the case. And that was after diving deep into, I love thinking about the future and the technology and how everything can help the way we do things. But why do I care about that? I think that really is the number one thing you really have to spend time thinking about is what difference are you trying to make? What are you trying to get, you know, what are you trying to learn from this environment? And once you have that, following that intuition and following that passion that you have, that purpose that you have found, that has made everything, you know, much better for me when I found sort of my purpose in this place and my purpose in the nonprofit sector, and which is bridging the gap, you know, between these technologies and underprivileged communities. And at the same time, educating and showcasing what is possible. That is ultimately the end goal, is to try to make a difference to those that need it. But in knowing that, everything that I do now aligns with that purpose and mission. So when I find a job at the library, and my first thought is, well, this is not going to help me in my Web3 career. Well, understanding that's what you're passionate about, you will find a way to really work with your passions and what you're good at. Then saying from sort of the ideas that I've told you about just not too long ago, of working Web3 into the blockchain. Another thing I would be is being patient and finding others around you that are also interested. That has helped me out a lot. I used LinkedIn as an escape goat of, there weren't many people around me that I could talk about Web3 and crypto and NFTs when I first started my journey. But my community, I found that in, you know, on LinkedIn and on Twitter, which made me had to spend more time on there, you know, learning, meeting people. But that has been one of the greatest experiences, is now I feel like I have met incredible people around the world because crypto, I've met with folks in India and Italy and China and South America. And you're like, when would I ever connect with anyone in these other countries if it weren't for this technology? So finding others around you or going to the places where, you know, these folks are working and learning, you really have to push yourself to go and get uncomfortable and meet people to be able to talk about these things. And you will learn a lot that way. From there, creating a focus group of some sort, whether you're in a professional career or if you're still a student and you guys don't have a student organization, I guarantee you, if I was a student right now, there's no student organization, I can find a handful of people at least that are in the crypto game, right? That have been traded NFTs. I feel like at this point, that's almost inevitable. So if you were to find 5 to 10 people, getting those folks together, it really is, when you try to go on a mission by yourself, that's when things can get very difficult. That's what I've learned so far. So finding those folks around you, getting together, you know, being that voice, it's really important. The last few things I would say is ask a ton of questions and have an open mind. Never feel like you know every answer, because the space moves very fast, and ask every question you can ever think of, because you will find loopholes, you will find areas that need improvement. Even in the nonprofit world, you know, there is the ethical conversations we need to have. There are examples to show of crypto being bad and then crypto being good. So really challenging yourself, keeping an open mind and understanding that, you know, everyone has a different experience and have learned or read about crypto, different than you have, right? So being empathetic to that matter and knowing like, okay, it's going to take time. I think that would really help out. So I know that was a lot, but I think those are a few things that really have helped me, you know, be where I'm at right now, where I'm feeling comfortable and confident to really talk about and help others and learn, continue to learn in this kind of crypto game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the most important thing that I'm taking away from that is that there's always opportunity, you know, as long as the culture's right and there's like a sense of like ambition, open-mindedness. I mean, there's been tons of businesses that have been super conventional or seem boring, you know, whether it's Amazon just being kind of a bookstore or, you know, I don't know, Gary Vee just kind of was like a wine liquor store. And they ended up like creating massive online brands, online businesses and pivoting and growing from there. So sometimes, you know, you can take a mundane thing like a library and it can become a whole universe of thought and exploration. So I really appreciate having you on the show today, Joel, and I hope that we can stay in touch as we both continue our journey here in the back half of our 20s and into our 30s.
Yeah, man. Jake, I appreciate that. And it's important that, you know, we continue to be connected and really continue to have conversations and support each other and support others that are in, you know, the crypto space and others that are wanting to start their own businesses, because it is very difficult to do so. And I share that because I'm in my mindset getting ready to do that same exact thing, you know, here shortly. And I can think about and start feeling, you know, this is kind of overwhelming, all the stuff that we had to do to get things done. So no, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me and having these conversations, man. It's been a great time.
And if our listeners want to get in contact with you or get involved in what you're doing at all, what's the best way to reach out? I know you mentioned LinkedIn and we'll have some show notes, but you know, what's the best way to connect and what are you looking for right now from our community? If you could get one thing, just putting it out there in the universe.
Man, just conversation. I'd love to know what students are thinking these days. Wake Forest has a blockchain club. I haven't been able to meet with them yet, but I just want to know what's happening, how we're feeling about this, where do we think, you know, NFTs or crypto or these technologies that, you know, our professors don't really know much about or is now starting to learn about. So for example, everyone's learning about ChatGPT and what that can do. And we have a lot of, you know, librarians and faculty members reaching out, faculty members and staff reaching out to librarians asking, can we learn about this? And so I'm curious what students are thinking. I'm curious what schools are doing. So I'd love to hear from anyone, even if it was just having a conversation about crypto. I love talking about this and I can't get enough of it every day. So reach out LinkedIn. My email is, I'll send you my email, but joelrivera41@gmail.com. Pretty simple. Feel free to reach out and we can chop it up.
Sounds good. Well, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for coming on the pod. Can't wait to talk to you more in the future. Farewell.
Yeah, Jake. Sounds good.
And there you have it, another episode in the books. It was so fun hanging out with Joel and talking to him about philanthropy, Web3, starting businesses, and our late 20s. Again, if you want to get involved in the show or be a guest, feel free to contact me, jake@educoinapp.com. And if you're interested in being part of BAF or our future pilots at Educoin, let me know. Happy to get you involved. Again, the music for today's show was made by Alu Diba, who's currently playing us out. And if you are out there, keep building, stay strong. We're here for you. Peace.